Hadi bakalım.
Just as the U.S. is about to actually do something about the runaway rogue intelligence apparatus, many of the people who are supposed to be against the empire are now in panic mode. And those who are on the side of the administration are urging caution not to throw out the baby Hitler with the bathwater. That's what we're talking about today.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Human Reaction, our Tuesday episode featuring myself and the inimitable David Rand, all the way from Helena, Montana, where he is currently doing statecraft and espionage on behalf of some nameless entities.
I thought that was my job.
I think he's joining you, Bennett.
Oh, okay.
We've also got Bennett on the buttons, of course, and we are missing our friend Kyle today. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it very much. Please, if you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button. It really helps the algorithm for us. If you're listening or watching elsewhere, please make sure that you're subscribed to the show or following on whatever platform. And it sounds like we have an interesting win of the week this week. Is that right, David?
Yeah, we got our boy and friend of the show and colleague of the show, Liam McCollum, put out a tweet, and it got a reply from Elon Musk floating the idea that Ron Paul should lead an audit of the Federal Reserve. And it went everywhere. I mean, we had like mainstream news publications covering this idea afterwards. Really amazing moment for Liam. And we're so happy for him.
Absolutely. And I should mention that this was so vanishingly close to fulfilling my moonshot bingo square of Elon retweeting Human Reaction. This was a reply. Our judge Adam said that that is not going to count. But hey, if Elon, if Liam got this far, I would say the chances are pretty good that maybe we get a retweet at some point.
Just a matter of time, man. It's still early. It's only February. We got 10 more months to get that thing done. And while here, be sure to leave a comment. It really helps the algorithm again. And this week, I just want to know, am I right about empire? Do we need an empire? That's the debate question of the week. So please jump in there and let me know if I'm on board, if I'm off board, and what you think.
Well, yeah, and this week we're going to be running through an episode of Tucker Carlson's podcast where he hosted Mike Benz, who we talk about all the time. And Mike had some interesting views on empire in this, and I'm really curious to hear your thoughts, David. How do you want to cue this up? You want to go into the clip?
Yeah, so it just starts out with, you know, basically Tucker Carlson saying, you know, how are you feeling right now? It looks like you're getting everything you want, and he had this to say.
It's a sort of somber moment, actually, more than anything. And it's, I found myself very reflective this week and hit by the weight of history of it, if that makes sense. And there's a lot to this. I mean, a lot of people have said, aren't you so happy? You've been fighting for this so long. Yes. Now it's happening. And so they expecting, you know, cartwheels and spiking footballs. And that's not how I feel really at all, because the task here was to break the halo of this angel that turned into an angel of death. I don't think we've had the success of the 20th century without having a soft power influence arm. I think this is how we had cheap gas and affordable homes you know, middle class prosperity and export markets for our manufactured goods here. The task is to be able to make it be righteous and virtuous again. But you couldn't do that while it had this halo. And so the halo had to be broken. The mask had to be taken off in order to implement reforms.
There we go. Yep. So the large scope of his argument is that while soft power projection has these downsides, has the censorship that he doesn't like, it does have benefits that he thinks are important. And this is the typical talking point that you'll find from supporters of these programs and supporters of the American empire, is this idea that the way we are prosperous is because we have ways of building in import and export markets using hard and soft power. And this is an old idea. It goes all the way back to the Banana Wars, pre-Spanish-American War, with American colonialism across the Caribbean, across South America and Central America. And this is a typical, like, it's a form of mercantilism. So classically, if you understand mercantilism as the Spanish model, which is we are going to go overseas and forcibly import things that we want, in this case, gold for the Spanish, and that will make us prosperous. It's an economic theory, but it's actually not, right? Because it's not actually economics. It's a government policy. And then there's the broader vision of state-sponsored capitalism as articulated, as kind of expressed under the British and other empires that, you know, are focused on import and export markets and kind of arranging them according to special interest groups of the government. And so he's kind of relying on that point of view to make his point, which I think is really important in this moment, right? Because we're right. It's never been this cool to be against the IC, right? It's never been this in the moment. And right as we get to this cusp of we actually might get some reform, we're actually looking at the budgets here and actually seeing all the absurdities that we are now being pulled back from that and saying, don't throw out that, as I said at the top, Hitler baby with the bathwater.
So Mike Benn seems to be asserting here, David, that we need the empire in order for the United States to be economically successful abroad. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that?
I do not. So the real difference here. Okay. So the vision of free trade is this idea that there is a mutual benefit between importers and exporters by the comparative advantage of the countries. This is classic Ricardo economics. That countries who have low trade barriers and don't do cronyism have this opportunity to freely allow the marketplace to choose specialties, even when the country that has an absolute advantage in some areas. So for example, we make both, you know, great software and we make great industrial equipment. It still makes sense for us to import some software, even if we have an absolute advantage across both areas. We benefit, consumers in America benefit from having all the opportunity of the additional of the freedom of that. So the mercantilist vision, as contrast to that, would protect American exports or imports, depending upon the, you know, the theory of mercantilism you're operating on. And in this case, it is our ability to project power overseas that keeps China weak, that makes us strong. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I'm curious how this applies to things that, like Mike Benn's said in previous interviews, talking about like the EU Digital Services Act and how the EU is kind of coming down hard on X. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how Mark Zuckerberg kind of had to play ball in order to like keep, you know, with the censorship stuff that they wanted in the EU in order to keep favorable relationships so he could have his products over there. Like the State Department was a primary player in sort of defending, you know, U.S. industries in that sense from regulatory overreach by the EU. So like, to what degree is it necessary in that case?
So I think in the case of Mike Benz, because his locus isn't our locus or my locus, I don't know about Kyle, but it's not the way I see it, in terms of he believes that the role of the State Department is to protect U.S. companies so that they have export markets overseas. Now I'm okay with that to the degree to which what we're saying is, hey, guys, maybe don't censor your public, you know, on behalf of the State Department. But it's important to understand that we were creating the incentives to censor in the first place, right? In this huge global effort to crack down on populism so that we could keep our efforts to keep the EU and NATO alliance alive so that we could dominate Europe forever. That is, you know, the motive that created the censorship industrial complex in the first place, according to what I'm seeing. What I see that as is a feature or a function of the boomerang effect, of how the impulse to arrange everything, you know, so that for the hegemony of the United States creates the censorship that then boomerangs around to the American public as well. And you would say, no, censoring overseas for other companies is fine. And I would say, no, I don't think we should be in that business. Overthrowing governments that we don't like is fine. And I'd say, I don't think we should be in that business. I'm a non-interventionist. I don't believe that that's actually the right role for the State Department. And it's just, it's a more narrow vision. And a lot of people are kind of surprised by Mike Benz in this. Like if you look at the YouTube comments of that, they're like, I can't believe he's saying this right now. It doesn't surprise me at all. Cause if you listen carefully to his interviews prior to this, he was always very careful to say that he is strategy agnostic, that these things might be necessary, but you know, he just doesn't like it when it blows back on censoring American citizens, which I understand. I mean, that's a lot better point of view than Bill Kristol or, you know, someone like that. Right.
Yeah. That's interesting. How does this relate to, I mean, you mentioned government overthrow, like how does this relate to terrorism and things like that?
Yeah. So it's really the question of like, what is the cost of empire? And, you know, this goes back to some really great stuff all the way back from the early 2000s from great libertarian thinkers like Brown and others talking about, you know, the consequence of empire is terrorism. Now, the last time we talked about a little bit of this on our Greenland episode, I was talking to Kyle and I said, you know, the first, you know, terror attack, I mean, real terror attack from a colony in the United States was Puerto Rican separatists in Congress, where they brought in weapons to Congress and shot it up, right? That is a result of the Banana Wars and the Spanish-American Wars. That is the natural consequence of trying to set up our empire. And it's important to understand, in the progressive era, that was exactly what the case was. I mean, you know, Republicans venerate Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, because he, you know, speak softly, carry a big stick. But his vision was for America to become a European style empire. And because that's what all the cool kids on the block were doing at that time. And I always feel like that was the worst error we made at that time. And then the other consequences of that are collateral to that. So it's not terrorism exactly, but, you know, in our, for example, in our monologue about immigration, you know, one of the key causes of the global immigration crisis right now is the consequences of American foreign policy in Central and South America and American foreign policy in the Middle East. In the Middle East, it's all the countries that we've been blowing up are the people flooding into Europe and causing immigration crises. In the case of Central America, it's, you know, when we're going into Nicaragua and we're going into and overthrowing governments in Chile and places like that, it creates collateral consequences. Mercantilism efforts in Venezuela probably create the current government in Venezuela in the long run, because people don't like to be ruled by a mercantilist regime. In fact, that's why we rejected the British, is because we didn't like the mercantilist regime of Britain. And this that natural impulse for, you know, autonomy and control over your own government away from a foreign power obviously creates resentment. And then, of course, if it turns the country into a basket case, it creates tremendous long-term consequences when people try to migrate out of that place to find someplace safer. They don't know about American foreign policy intervention. We barely know about American foreign policy intervention in those areas. We only know what WikiLeaks gives us and what's declassified. So, of course, those people just go seek the best shelter they can. And that happens to be America. And when it comes to the Northwest, or when it comes to the Americas, and when it comes to Europe and the Middle East, of course, it turns out they all go to Europe.
Yeah. And so our efforts to sort of nation build in this way or exert our soft power influence to overthrow governments or whatever actually does end up eroding the very, you know, national identity of our own countries by way of immigration that obviously the America First movement is very against right now. I mean, how is the America First movement reconciling this? I mean, obviously, I think a lot of people in this space, like you mentioned, are kind of surprised to hear Mike Benz talk like this and not be just jumping up and down excited that USAID is getting gutted and all of the, you know, the agencies that are corrupt and you know, committing fraud and wasting taxpayer dollars are getting thoroughly audited. I mean, how are people looking at this through the boomerang effect that you mentioned there?
Yeah. So and then the boomerang effect is that level of like the migration crisis and stuff like that. But it's also in this case, the censorship, or it's in the case of police militarization. The GWAT creates people standing on top of police cars pointing sniper rifles at protesters, circa Ferguson.
Yeah.
right? It's the sale of military equipment to police that creates, that has the police not being your family neighborhood cop, but a guy decked out in SWAT gear. Now, when SWAT isn't, of course, necessary, right? I mean, there's probably a role for SWAT in some cases. But I'm just saying that the kind of, we see this in policy too. Like we see this in the way that we orientate towards an empire of lies, right? If we have to lie to the American public to sell, to hide from them the empire you're building on, because you're the watcher on the rim. You're the guy in, what's that movie? A Few Good Men, right? You can't handle the truth, right? It's that sentiment, right? That you know, the American really people don't want an empire, right? So we got to lie them into it. And so we created an agency with the right, according to Eisenhower's, you know, founding a directive for the CIA, for plausible deniability, to say as long as we can lie about it reasonably, then we can do it, which is, of course, completely antithetical to the very vision of the country. And it's the foundation of the invisible empire. So it's that's the loss of moral legitimacy that, you know, we can't be the thing that we say we are because we're not a country based on liberty, because we're overthrowing governments all over the world with USAID. That doesn't make us a country of liberty. That makes us the totalitarian dictator of the world.
For sure. And obviously, you mentioned we don't make any friends in that process, you know, with regard to regimes that we do overthrow or with the. You know, separatist or, you know, other coalitions that develop or could develop against a ruling power in a country. If we go and fund them, we're obviously really not making friends with that government, or probably not even with the population of that country who are now living in a war-torn area.
Exactly. Well, and it gets on the global strategy level as well. So it's the Ukrainian power play for natural gas in order to benefit natural gas exporters in the United States that result in the overthrowing of the 2014 coup that has the tertiary benefit, well, the hegemony benefit of, so I don't think it's tertiary, the major benefit of isolating Russia and making them into a gas station that's now poor with an army, right? So that, you know, export market focused thing then creates the Ukrainian war with 1 million people dying, right? And then you look at it and you say, and then we blow up the Nord Stream pipeline. Now Europe's energy infrastructure is crumbling and they're losing their prosperity. So all on behalf of our oil manufacturer, all our oil exports, our natural gas exports.
Yeah.
Well, right.
Not just that. I mean, think about all the money that our military industrial complex is making from this. How can you say it's not a good thing? We're bringing so much economic development back to the United States.
Yeah, we're redeveloping the defense industrial base, right? Right, which is so great for Northern Virginia and the places that manufacture these things at the cost of one, our moral legitimacy over, you know, internationally. And additionally that, to bring us on the brink of nuclear war, and not to mention that, now this is what I call the King's Gambit. Now, Stormlight Archive nerd fans will all recognize this, is when you create a hegemon and then you enforce that hegemony, not by, you know, being the freest trade, the most, you know, just society that is out there saying, hey, if you want to work with America, America will work with you. We're not going to let you take advantage of us, but we're also not going to go over and overthrow your governments, right? And we're also not going to invade, you know, countries because we just felt like it, aka Bush regime, you know, and or, you know, Obama and all these other things using covert ops. You know, what it creates is a power block that pushes back. So now we have we go into Ukraine and now we have China and Russia, who are not natural allies, now allied against us. Alongside Iran, which who knows why we're even, you know, ticked off at Iran at this point. That war was, you know, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, right? So like it's completely unsensical, but it has to do with the maintenance of the hegemony, the maintenance of the empire is what's most important, and that subsumes all other interests. And once you're looking at the world that way because you believe that's where your prosperity comes from, then it's worth the bill. But I don't think it's worth the bill. I think 1 million people is not worth the bill. For more oil, natural gas exports, a higher natural gas export market for American natural gas providers.
Yeah, I would say that's not worth the trade-off either. And once again, it calls back to your, you know, the degradation of our sort of moral legitimacy. You know, we're now favoring economics over human lives, and that's completely wrong.
Well, it's not even economics; it's cronyism.
Sure.
That's a form of cronyism. If you go and overthrow a government using soft power in order to in order to do that, not only do you have the boomerang effect coming back, not only do you have the migrant crisis out of Ukraine as a microcosm of that, which is a huge problem, but then you have this slush fund of money that's out there running around with, you know, weapons that could shoot down civilian airliners in the hands of who knows who. And then you got Russia and Ukraine, and then the BRICS nations forming against that in order to not be economically, you know, dominated. So like and it doesn't have to happen by economic domination by fiat. It can happen because we're the best manufacturer of stuff around. Right. And we can be. But instead, what we did was we, in the 1960s and 70s, we said, no, we're not going to be. We're going to implement all this stuff, all this bureaucracy to keep us from being able to make anything around here. And then we're going to export, you know, manufacturing to other countries. And we're going to say that's a good thing. And then we're going to say, and then we got to make sure we keep those countries open. So we have to, of course, we have to militarily dominate them, you know, and then that's going to get pushed back in the run. China's not going to take that forever, you know, so like they want to be their own people, too.
For sure. I think you should debate Mike Benz on this. I think that would be great.
I have so much respect for that guy. I've been following him for a very long time, like way before. I mean, right when we started the podcast 2 years ago was when I first found him. And I find it to be that would be an awesome privilege.
Yeah.
Because it's just that I just have I would love to talk to somebody about that, because I just don't think that the I would suspect that most of it is seeing economic theory in the absence of economic history, right? Because, you know, empires do crumble, and they crumble for discrete reasons that we can look to. Now, that doesn't mean ours will crumble exactly the same way, but when you look at our debt, when you look at our inability to control spending, like what we're currently facing right now with the freeze on Doge and the way Congress is pushing back, the fraud and waste and abuse that we can't even stop because all of a sudden now the Democrats are pro fraud, waste and abuse, you know, much less pro overthrowing regimes and, you know, soft power coup efforts. It's hard, you know, like that is what I see. That I see the consequences of empire. I don't know what he sees.
Well, and we're going to get to that, obviously, the leftist sort of response to Doge and all of this. But
yeah,
before we do, I'm really curious, like, do you think it's even fair for a guy like Mike Benz to be strategically agnostic? I mean, especially in light of the fact that he has been such a like front runner sounding the alarm for the absolute rampant corruption that's going on in this space. Is he maybe just feeling like, you know, he's sort of like he bears some of the weight, a substantial portion of the weight for like the actions that are being taken here, and he wants to kind of like step back from that just a little bit?
Well, and this kind of happened this week, too, with Eric Weinstein on Piers Morgan, who had a very similar comment. Right. But it was more of a leftist kind of thing. It was like in the All In podcast, kind of more of a leftist kind of thing. I forget the liberal guy on the
Jason
on the
Calacanis.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's my favorite.
You know, it's like we don't want to throw out the baby with the humanitarian bathwater. And we want to make sure that, you know, we keep all the good stuff. And, you know, and I'm not saying that maybe there isn't some good stuff in there. It's pure charity. Maybe it is.
There's obviously 294, you know, good people to about, you know, 13,800 bad people, right?
Yeah. I mean, who knows?
Not bad people, but that's the proportion of good stuff to bad stuff. It seems like, at least according to Marco Rubio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's in terms of the employment. I mean, who knows how many programs there are?
Sure.
Right. I mean, like we're still just getting a grasp on that.
Yeah.
And so like. But once again, if you take and I see your point, like it makes sense to me from a messaging point of view to say, hey, I'm not against the intelligence communities, especially if you don't want to get, you know, hit with a heart attack gun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not against them. I just think this thing that they're doing in internet censorship is wrong. I'm a civil libertarian. You know, that's I think a legitimate position to hold. And to me, it's really about what I hope to do is to start a discussion about what are we really about here? Like, are we about that game? Are we actually about this thing or not? You know, and what is we're going to have a discussion about not just the right use of aid, but what is the right use of government? And should we have a foreign policy of international domination forever, or should we have a policy of being a country like every other country? You know, so we don't face these problems.
Yeah.
Because that's how a lot of countries operate, right? A lot of countries get along just fine with plenty of prosperity without being, you know, the global hegemon.
Well, and it seems like that might be actually, or at least becoming, the prevailing attitude within this administration, at least with Marco Rubio's comments to draw on, kind of talking about the multipolar world and how, you know, sort of indicating, hey, maybe we're moving past this unipolar moment where of U.S. hegemony in the world. And I mean, obviously, I think we have to. And I mean, Elon Musk made some statements in a press conference with Donald Trump today, you know, talking about how if we don't solve the deficit, like, the country will collapse, you know. And I think we've all been saying this. I mean, lots of people have been saying this. Ron Paul, you know, notably, you name it, like, a lot of people in the conservative libertarian space have been pointing this out, and I think it's pretty obvious at this point. So hopefully that's the case where the administration is seeing, like, hey, this is just an unsustainable path. Just by the numbers, we can't continue to do this, let alone the moral component of should we do it.
Yeah, right. And that's ultimately, like, what Doge is doing is zero-based budgeting, right? And I love that analogy from the All In podcast, right? It's this idea that you got to know the function before you pay for it. But the question we have to beg is, what is the just function of U.S. foreign policy? And if MAGA can't get this right, and we're like, man, we gotta make sure to dominate Panama or put troops in Gaza or, you know, or militarily invade Greenland or Canada or something like that, and all that kind of silliness. And I think a lot of that's silliness. I don't think it's serious. But, you know, those sorts of questions. And then when it comes to the soft power, it gets even more difficult, right? Because then you get to lie about it, right? You know, if we just gut this whole thing, it's only the IRI, the International Republican Institute, and we just totally get rid of NED and we just punish our enemies. But we never get to the question of what is the just use of this power that we have. You know, we're unlikely to deploy that in good ways. And keep in mind that the IRI is why we were in Ukraine in the first place. It wasn't until later that the NED got involved and it became the soft power coup that it was in 2014.
Yeah. Well, speaking of lying, what's going on with the leftist conspiracy theorizing about Doge?
Well, one more thing. I want to note this, and I think it's really important, because I actually think empire's bad militarily, too. So empire has this habit of fighting the last war. Right? And a great example of this is World War II. World War I and World War II, right? Where you had the British Empire going against tanks with horses, right?
Yeah.
And you have this up-and-coming empire, the German Empire, that is trying to get onto the global stage as a legitimate European force, you know, coming in with innovative new strategy. So the problem of empire, at least one of them from a military point of view, is that they often fail in the long run militarily because they evoke a pushback, because politics is Newtonian, right? As you push, it pushes back. And then, and that's the King's Gambit phenomena. And then on top of that, there's this, you know, the same thing that's happened with Doge is happening in our military strategy, where we're not fighting the next generation of warfare. Mm-hmm. We're looking to China to find out what they're doing. We're trying to copy it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, it's the point that we talked about last episode or the one before that, you know, buying a bunch of new battleships or whatever they might be, trying to fight a drone swarm of 10,000 drones. Like, there's a mismatch there. It's the same thing as what's been going on in Ukraine, you know, sending a $2 million missile after a $200 drone or whatever, like trying to, you know, beat an insurgent enemy with technology that is not keeping up with the trend and is not capable of matching, like, just even on a dollar for dollar basis, the might of a much smaller force. Is that kind of what you're describing?
That's right. Exactly. Well, and innovation is what wins, you know, in this space. And it's the same thing with our own technology, right? We're surprised that DeepSeek, am I right? The Chinese one. Yeah. That came out of nowhere, right? That they couldn't possibly compete with us, of course, out of our arrogance, right? And so we're like, are we ahead or behind on AI?
It's hard
now
to say. I have heard some rumblings that, and I don't know if this is confirmed or not, but that DeepSeek was trained using ChatGPT to accelerate the training of its model. So I don't know for sure if it was just a totally organic lower power entity like that. And maybe there are other dynamics, like other, you know, parallel ways that that takes place in the military sphere. I mean, obviously, if you are tremendously outgunned in a traditional sense, like, let's just say, the American revolutionaries, you don't fight front to front. You don't march out into a field and very orderly take turns shooting at each other. You hide behind trees and you take on a more guerrilla mindset. So there's sort of like an underdog mentality that takes place when you are fighting the Empire. And as the Empire, we have probably lost sight of that fact. I mean, Afghanistan is a great example of that. You know, we were bogged down there for 20 years and spent trillions of dollars and millions of lives on all sides, and we don't have anything to show for it.
Yeah. I mean, and so the military ossification, and then, but but also in our overconfidence, you know, are we falling behind on technology, right? So in China, they're able to make an EV for $10,000.
And is that?
That's competitive with Tesla.
But is that because of the regulatory environment that we have here?
Yeah. So we believe we can afford all the regulatory environment stuff. We don't have to be competitive because we can just use the State Department to make us rich. That's the that is what empire does.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how's the left responding to this?
So So I wanted to pull this clip from my favorite lefty, Crystal Ball.
Your favorite punching bag these days.
Well, it just I have a lot of respect for her on a lot of things. So I don't mean to say that harshly, but this kind of approach that I see seems common from the left right now on, rather than talking about the thing that you would think that a progressive that is critical of U.S. foreign policy and soft power projection would take on these things, like Glenn Greenwald is doing, instead are focused on very different priorities.
I guess for me, I don't really particularly care that much about the approval rating. I just think that this is a, you know, unconstitutional attack by one billionaire who happens to be the richest man on the planet, who has conflicts with all of these agencies. You know, if you look at the things that he's doing, it's also really clear the way so many of these actions are just blatant self-dealing, right? With USAID, is this the reason he went after them first? I don't know, but they were investigating the use of Starlink satellites in Ukraine. CFPB, we're going to talk about later. You know, he didn't want them regulating X, as X just signed a deal with Visa, didn't want them regulating him. And, you know, they were about to start that. All of these fintech companies, payment apps, all of this sort of stuff fell under the CFPB purview. And so they want that gone. So that's gone. Trump signed an executive order to take out a specific commission, a specific office within the Department of Labor that, lo and behold, happened to also be investigating Elon Musk over alleged employment discrimination. The National Labor Relations Board, which has now been gutted and literally can't do its job and is no longer defending itself in court. Elon despises unions, like, long time, very open about that. He's a union buster. He's a strike buster. And he is actually suing in court to render that whole body unconstitutional. And they are no longer even defending themselves in court. So, you know, to me, and I think this transitions into the next piece of this, which is there is also something we've talked about here before, an ideological plan outside of Project 2025 that is more revolutionary, let's say, and Elon describes this as a revolution. The ideological blueprint really laid out by Curtis Yarvin, and part of the idea there is you fire all the government employees. And when the courts try to stop you, and this is words that came out almost verbatim from J.D. Vance's when he was doing the podcast circuit before he was elected vice president. When the courts try to stop you, you just keep going. You just ignore them. You say, you know, enforce it with your army. Good luck. And there seems to be a lot of buildup right now in that direction of making the case for why they should just ignore every court ruling that goes against them. So J.D. Vance himself, we can put this up on the screen. This is probably the most significant of the Twitter discourse about whether or not these rulings should just be ignored. He says, if a judge tried to tell a general how to conduct a military operation, that would be illegal. If a judge tried to command the attorney general and how to use her discretion as a prosecutor, that's also illegal. Judges are not allowed to control the executive's legitimate power. okay, the whole point of checks and balances is that the court system is supposed to be a check on when the executive tries to seize power for itself. That is not, in fact, legitimate. So in J.D. Vance's conception here, the executive gets to decide for itself what power grabs are legal, constitutional, and what are not. That is pretty obviously the polar opposite of the way that the system has been set up and, you know, has been used in the past. Even his examples here are like kind of.
There you go, bud. Yeah. Yeah. So, Joe, is Elon president or not? Or is Donald Trump president? I'm confused. It seems like Crystal's a little confused.
I'm not
about
sure. I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on for a second. Trump didn't put his hand on the Bible during the inauguration, and I wasn't the only one to notice it. So I'm not actually sure who's president.
I did. Ooh. Whoa.
I believe it. I don't remember the justice. Was it John Roberts who was doing the swearing in? He kind of jumped into it too soon, and Melania didn't have time to walk up with the Bible, so they did it without it. I don't know what significance that makes for the legal process, but no, technically speaking, Elon is not president. Although, he does probably have a lot of sleepovers at the White House, I imagine.
Well, and you notice this narrative that's forming right now amongst the Democrats that is, you know, Elon has taken over the government. Like, they talk way more about Elon than they do about Donald Trump.
And why?
I have a theory as to why. I think the goal is drive down Elon's numbers in public support. So that Donald Trump eventually gets rid of him.
I mean, because they can get rid of him. They can't get rid of Trump. They're stuck with him for 4 years. I mean, I suppose they could try impeachment again, but good luck with that.
Yeah, third time's the charm.
True.
Exactly. Well, it's a divide and conquer strategy, right? If you have an alliance between two factions that don't necessarily share all the same goals, and one is the more powerful person, the core process is you divide those two people.
That assessment of the strategy, I'm not sure how successful it's going to be. You have to think that this administration is coming in, obviously, very clearly, much more calculated than the first time around. And they have to foresee these tactics coming and see them for what they are. I mean, it's pretty transparent, it seems like, right? This has been the mission all along. I mean, this was the mission during the campaign. And even post-election, pre-inauguration, try to divide Elon and Trump. But it hasn't worked so far. Do you think it's going to work in the future?
I you never know. I mean, it just depends on how much Trump is sensitive to polling at this particular juncture, right? Or if the mainstream can actually carry that. But I get really discouraged when I see non-mainstream news shows like Breaking Points really dealing in this sort of rhetorical silliness, right? Because it's like, is Elon a duly, is Elon legitimate? Right. Well, he's a government employee under a legitimate government body that has been renamed DOGE with the function of these things. Right. And then just spreading massive lies. Right. I mean, you got Chuck Schumer saying, you know, before basically saying like, oh, they have access to everyone's social security numbers. You don't know what they're going to do with that. And this like conspiratorial like, be afraid. Yeah. There might be something bad happen. It's not as if he's saying, well, no, SpaceX now has the sole charter on all ICMBs going forward, right? That's not happening. Yeah, that hasn't happened yet.
All the stuff about, you know, Elon wanting to dismantle all the agencies that are investigating him. I mean, wasn't the labor one in particular that was investigating him, wasn't that about him not hiring enough, foreign employees, but he couldn't because he has defense contracts and he has to hire citizens in order to fulfill, like, aren't there some things like that are in play here where they're just like, they're really just laying out this like smokescreen of, oh, look, all this nefarious stuff is going on. But really, there's like a lot of facts underneath that just say like, your case is really, really stupid.
Well, I think from MAGA world, what they see is lawfare, you know, that was illegitimate being conducted against somebody who was supporting a president that was not the regime president.
Yeah.
Right. So like, is that what it is? Or are all these all legitimate, completely above board processes? You know, when the Democrats have so perverted the process of justice in order to prosecute their political opponents, that starts this cycle that results in maybe the president ignoring courts. But y'all started it. right? The Democrats started this, and she is not an establishment Democrat. So why would you take on the point of view that all of these things are legitimate? Well, it's in order to cast the billionaire, scary word again. Watch out for billionaires, guys. Super different. They're not like you. You should probably distrust them just on the fact that they have the B word next to their name, or the world's richest man, like as if that makes him somehow morally inferior when two seconds ago he was the darling of the left.
And I mean, speaking to that double standard, how is it any different that Elon Musk have influence in the White House, albeit perhaps more overtly, conspicuously, you know, a sort of influence within the White House versus somebody like George or Alex Soros or another billionaire who supported Joe Biden?
Bill Gates.
Mm-hmm. Bill Gates. I mean, you could name any number of leftist mm-hmm. darling billionaires that the media had no problem with being at the White House multiple times a month or a week.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, and it's just the fact that he has plays a public role and he has a big microphone that they have to go after and kill the guy. I don't know if it works. I don't know. I can't really guess any of that. I'm bad at predictions. But what I would suggest
bingo so
is
far.
That, you know, the,
I think so. I'm pretty sure.
Am I? Oh, I thought I was behind. I thought Joe or Kyle had me up at this point.
We'll have to do
I had
an early full accounting lead. I was pretty sure I lost tally it. At this point on Friday. Check it out.
Right. But this is the, but exactly. I mean, but everyone has to keep in mind that in the billionaire donor ratio, Joe Biden had a lot more.
Yeah.
As did Hillary Clinton. So like just keeping that in mind is just, and like people are going to forget that really quick because of the visibility effect. But I mean, I'm personally, it's hard for me to gauge where we're at on this, you know, for the general public. I mean, I can tell you what X thinks, you know, pretty well. I can tell you what the people in my circle think, and that's that USAID is a criminal organization, you know, that is funneling money to leftist causes that are benefiting leftists. And, you know, I was so surprised this week. I had discovered that one of the groups that I got into a huge fight with in the Montana legislature over campus free speech turned out to be funded by USAID in Montana. I mean, and like you know, like I said last time we kind of covered this, the difference in scale of the left wing nonprofit infrastructure to the right wing is enormous. And we've always wondered why. Right. And now we know. And I mean, everything from that to NewsGuard to News, Internews, and all these other kind of media organizations. Yeah, PolitiFact. And of course, you're looking at all the mainstream ones with the subscriptions like Politico, New York Times, well, you know, all that kind of stuff. I like the way Mike says, Mike Benn says, you know, the Truman Show effect of like everything is actually a lie, you know, like that you would expect non-mainstream Democrat progressives who are like true leftist progressives who are usually good on the issues of the American empire to be celebrating this moment because this is their opportunity to actually break through the mainstream filter that keeps them out. But unfortunately, I mean, from what I've seen, with the exception of Glenn Greenwald, this is all covered as a billionaire takeover of the world, right? As if there was a billionaire who's in charge of the Biden administration and the last Trump administration, as if hierarchy is something we just invented in 2024.
With, you know, some fairly mainstream liberal friends in my community, it seems like a mix between terror and rage, mostly what they're feeling right now, which, you know, seem to be fairly par for the course for the left, just generally when there's a Republican in the White House, let alone in both houses of the Congress and also generally with the Supreme Court as well. So, I mean, I think they're feeling highly outnumbered and sort of like, you know, a wild animal backed into a corner. They're lashing out at every possible thing that they can. And I think probably that's why you're seeing some of these independent Democrat commentators like Crystal Ball kind of coalescing with the rest of the left media, because they sort of need to do that. They're obviously very adept at doing that they've always been better at that than the right, as you mentioned, you know, as well as things like, you know, the NGO funding network and all that stuff. So it just seems like they're feeling, you know, really, really cornered, and they're just going after whatever they possibly can right now. That just seems to be Doge and Elon, because that's what's in the headlines, and all their darling organizations that I think the the regular left voter has always seen with this veneer of altruism, you know, as their goodness is being torn down. And what I say to that is like, okay, like, I'm sorry that that's happening to you. I'm personally happy about it. But now you have the opportunity to go take your charity into your own hands instead of spending my money and feeling good about doing that.
Exactly. The other part of that that she brought up is the process question, which is, can the executive do this alone and to what degree? And I think that's largely met with the American public with, well, so what? Right. I mean, like you're defrauding the American taxpayer. I don't care who exposes it and says no. Right. And then the other question to that is, does DOGE as a government, you know, agency have the statutory right to go in and say, no, you were told not to do this and you're doing this. So therefore you are fired. Right. Because insubordination is actually one of the things you can actually fire people for in government. If you say don't do that, then they do that. Well, that's what was happening to USAID. And then taking all this lawfare and then taking USAID as an example, well, he's only wanting to end USAID because they were advocating for the EU censorship, you know, industrial complex thing, Digital Services Act. You know, as if what he says about it, which is that they said, hey, don't send out any money till we've had a chance to review it. And then they kept sending money.
Yeah, right.
And so they said, let's go check out this thing. Right. Which is actually what they did at Twitter. That's exactly what they did at Twitter. They turned off the credit cards and they discovered they were paying for software that wasn't actually in use. Right. And like programs and grifting that was happening off of Twitter's baseline. That's why it went from a barely reach even to a very profitable company now. So like you, and don't get me wrong, there could be legitimate process questions here. In my ideal world, this would be followed up with legitimate legislation that would codify these things and real budget processes that would actually cut the budget. But in the absence of that, does the executive have the right to fire employees who are insubordinate and not following what they're supposed to be doing? Well, I fail to see how you could have an executive without that. Otherwise, how do you have a democracy? Because you have somebody who's legitimately elected, appointing somebody to do this process. And then the permanent bureaucracy, what we call the deep state, is now saying, no, I don't feel like it. And then, and then they're saying, well, I'm sorry, you have to leave.
The Trump administration has completely ignored the courts. I mean, there was an injunction placed against the severance offering that was offered to federal employees, right? That pushed it out a week or so. I think that might have come up yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. But to my knowledge, you know, they delayed the deadline to decide if you want to quit the government and get this 8-month severance package, or you want to stay. You know, they did delay that, so it's not like they're just wholesale saying, "Yeah, sorry, screw you, judicial branch. We're not going to do anything you say." But also, like, they're bringing these cases in front of very closely, tightly hand-selected leftist judges who were installed under the previous administration and prior Democratic administrations and funded by Soros's Open Society Foundation. So like they're going about it in their own very nefarious means to try to basically overturn what are legitimate actions by the executive branch and by calling them illegitimate and just getting one of their buddies to, you know, write an injunction. So I don't know. I don't have a lot of pity for them personally.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not like this is the first time Democrats or anybody in the political process has said, hey, wait, I have a legitimate, notice in the tweet that she then kind of casts as if there was something suspicious about, legitimate power to do things that are within the executive branch's power. And if the courts overstep in that area, I can ignore it because that's not their legitimate power. And if they want to go through the process, sue me. Right. Yeah. I mean, like, that's how it works. And when it came to abortion, Democrats were on exactly this exact same talking point about 2 seconds ago. We got this great clip from AOC doing exactly the same thing.
There has been thought, I believe, given to this. Senator Ron Wyden has already issued statements, for example, advising what we should do in a situation like this, which I concur, which is that I believe that the Biden administration should ignore this ruling. I think that we, the courts have the legitimacy and they rely on the legitimacy of their rulings. And what they are currently doing is engaged in an unprecedented and dramatic erosion of the legitimacy of the courts. It is the justices themselves, through the deeply partisan and unfounded nature of these rulings, that are undermining their own enforcement.
So you're saying the Biden administration should ignore this court, but what does that look like? What does that actually mean?
You know, I think the interesting thing when it comes to a ruling is that it relies on enforcement. And it is up to the Biden administration to enforce, to choose whether or not to enforce such a ruling.
But is that...
the in-face from AOC there. Yeah, exactly. This is exactly the process we go through every single time someone is out of power. They use lawfare to try to get their way. They see what they can get away with. That's what the court process is kind of for, in a sense. It's adversarial process for that reason. There's no way not to have political judges. I can't imagine a non-political judge. So, of course, they're going to accuse the other side of being biased. I mean, this is just standard fare. And Democrats are acting as if, you know, once again, history started in 2024. And this is the first time any executive ever said, well, I think I do have the legitimate authority to do what I'm doing, actually. Especially at an injunction where the government was not allowed to be there, where the Trump administration was not allowed to represent themselves.
Wait, explain that.
So the injunction against Doge was done ex parte, I want to say, where basically the judge says, whoa, I'm just going to hold this. I'm going to freeze this because I think it's illegal. And that was done without any, you know, argumentation from either, from one side. It happens during what the judge considers to be an emergency.
What are we, Brazil?
Which ending fraud, like Brazil, yeah. Ending fraud is apparently an emergency. Yeah.
I mean,
for
their paychecks are on the line.
Because it might end the gravy train, right? Well, with FJP, right? Well, who might have been the people who paid for their election campaign?
What FJP is?
Well, when you're referencing a lot of the progressive network of AGs and judges, USAID and many of NED and a lot of these organizations have what they call judicial reform priorities, which include things like, you know, FJP, which ended up being the same people who were largely involved in the Trump lawfare program, you know,
what is
last year and the year before. Oh, I can't remember. Partnership.
Fair and just prosecution.
Exactly.
I ask Grok, and there's like,
I'm sure that's what
there's
actually
like six
named.
Things called.
It's
FJP,
always some name
so,
like that.
Anyway, we won't go into it. But yes, this was one of the orgs that
we covered in the last podcast.
The DAs that were being elected on the left, funded by, of course, like the Open Society Foundation, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and other sorts of investments in law, right? So it's not just AGs. That's just one of the expressions that we're most sensitive to, because we have like the mimetic understanding around it, like the broad social consciousness about what that means. But it's judicial reform from these programs are much broader, especially overseas. But the impacts domestically, that I don't think you can underweigh, right? But it's the deeper we dig on this, I think it's going to become more substantial.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, that was the second one.
Okay.
That sounds right.
It's probably not finger joint pine, I'm guessing.
Probably not.
All right. Well, David, I think this has been a great episode. Thanks for coming to us all the way from Helena during your busy schedule. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I look forward to any engagement on this. I really want to know if I'm right. You know, I thought a lot about
people
it this week. Like, it was kind of brewing
right,
in the
though.
Back of my mind. Like, there's some
people don't comment when you're right.
What's that? I know. What's up with that? I
well,
want to hear
it here.
David
folks.
Is absolutely right.
If you
right.
think David is right, leave a comment. If you hear. Think David is totally off his rocker, also leave a comment. And if you want to tell David in a more personal fashion how you really feel, join the Discord. Link is in the description below. You can join the community, talk all the shit you want. We have no censorship in the Discord at all. You can say whatever you want.
There was one stint.
There was one moment where we didn't realize we had a mod filter turned on. That was an accident, or maybe Kyle did it. I don't know. I'll throw him under the bus because he's not here. In any case,
I get plenty of shit on the Discord, so don't feel like it's like some big love fest in there. Like if you're like wondering, you know, you want to get in and give us the goods.
Come give us the goods.
Yeah, it's a place for you.
Fight with Adam.
All right, guys, thanks for watching. This has been an episode of Human Reaction. For David Rand from Helena, Montana, and Bennett on the buttons, I'm Joe Sheehan. We'll see you on Friday for our weekly new roundup show. Have a good night. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.